Fly ball, right center field, back in the gap goes Nimmo with Marte. Marte's got it, and the Mets hang on to win. Jorge Lopez gets his first save as a Mets. Great play by Tyrone Taylor to help save him. Huge night for Brandon Nimmo with two home runs and five RBIs. And the Mets win a thriller from the Braves as they hang on 8-7.
It in the air to pretty deep left field. Back goes Duvall near the wall, and it's out of here. A grand slam for Tyrone Taylor to add the icing on the cake. Taylor hits a grand slam off Luis Guillorme to make it 16-4 New York.
Jeff, quite the offense for you guys this series. What'd you like overall as a group these three games?
We're just taking really good at bats. You know, we're battling out there. I know the first, week didn't go how we wanted, but went on the road. We're pretty comfortable with this Braves team. We've seen the pitching before, so I think, guys were able to settle down a little bit and, put some good swings on some balls.
With the pitcher that started the game for the Braves today, Winans, it seemed like he really only felt comfortable throwing that changeup a lot. He threw it over 50% of the time. Were you guys as a group able to key on that, and did that, contribute to the success you had against him?
Yeah, I think, with him, you just got to see the ball up. His changeup is really good. It's hard to pick up sometimes. I was a little out in front on it. But guys did a good job. Those are the guys you kind of got to stay back on. Try to drive them the other way, not do too much, and I think we did that.
What about for you? You mentioned the slow start offensively as a team. For you personally, looked like this series you really started to hit the line drives again. What's been different here these last few games?
Just made a few, minor adjustments. Went back and watched some video. Saw some things I didn't really like, and just tried to get back to that, and felt like I seen the ball a lot better, and was able to use the whole field and put some good swings on it.
Who's going to win the Masters?
Oh man, I hope Tiger, but Scotty Scheffler's playing some pretty good golf right now. We'll see.
All right, Jeff, I appreciate the time.
All right, thank you.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, April the 12th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and of course, don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a special edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Coming off the Mets, a 4-2 road trip, things getting normalized. There's a little bit of calm in the seas. Figured I'd come to you here on this Friday morning before the Mets take on the Royals. A rematch of the 2015 World Series, for whatever that's worth. Big weekend, Doc Gooden getting his number retired. Maybe we'll get quickly got some interesting information about that. And I know that Sunday will probably be a little bit about Doc, so I wanted, where it's still fresh, to react and come to you guys. Every once in a while, we pop in with these midweek shows, and they're usually when there's bad news. But look, after what was supposed to be a 7-game road trip, and now a 6-game road trip, I think we feel a little bit better. The Mets are not going to lose 120 games like everybody predicted. And there's still a lot of issues to talk about. There's still a lot of concerns. I have a major concern, and I'll share it with you. But the baseball season has started. Now, just like the players, whether you're a pundit like me or a fan like you, whatever you want to call yourself, you got to get into it. A new season is like cracking the cellophane off of something. So spring training is sleepy. There's no adrenaline in spring training for anybody. And even though you get pumped on opening day or you get pumped in the first few games of the season, it's like you just got into the run. You just got into the workout. And there's always that moment early on where the juices get flowing and that's where like the season really started. And you know what I think that is for the 2024 Mets, at least for me? was the Ozzie Albies at bat in the eighth inning against Drew Smith on Monday night. The check swing that I thought was strike three. I know that I saw some, and I always forget this website. And if you know it, tweet at me, because I got to save it, which basically goes through, it's like the baseball version of the NBA's last two-minute report, except they assess the accuracy of the umpires the whole game, and then they give you kind of who benefited, which apparently the Mets benefited more on Monday than the Braves when it comes to the umpires' bad calls, whatever you want to call it. And they go through like key calls that should have been, that were missed and whatnot, whatever. But to me, I thought that was all night they're calling every check swing a strike. All night I watched it. And the minute they had a chance to make the right call or make the big call that could have helped the Mets, all of a sudden, nope. And that was the same umpire. And I don't know if it was Junior Valentin or who it was on that crew. But that the third base umpire blew a call that was a fair ball that cost the Mets a run earlier in the game. So I don't know. That to me was a whole nother thing. But when I get up and I start yelling and I'm fired up and I'm like, you know, using some words that we can't use on a family show, like the Talking Mets podcast. The dogs are, you know, because I'm now that it's a little bit later at night. I'm upstairs. I'm in my bedroom. The dogs are sleeping. They get woken up. My wife gets mad at me. So like that means the baseball season is here. The juices were flowing. And then admit it, that was a sweaty ninth inning by Jorge Lopez. You heard the last out. I thought when the ball got off Darno's bat, I thought it was gone. And away you go. And then the following night, you had no confidence that the Mets could repeat after such a stressful, even though they had their full bullpen ready to go. And here it is. You know, you're probably like me. I had some things going on. I checked out at 6-0. You go back, you check, you look at, you go to your MLB TV, you look at the replay, like, oh, 6-5, they made a comeback. And they had a chance to really do some damage. That wasn't just like garbage time 6-5 where it's a one-run game, but it's just the score was padded at the end. No, they had a chance to make some damage there with Pete at the plate in the ninth inning. And then they wrap around after the rainout on a day game, and the Braves decide to push Max Fried out and away from the Mets, probably because he's been struggling. And here they go, and they basically put up a football score. And a total 180 from last year, where anytime the Mets had a lead on the Braves, you guys remember the series in early June. We're really 2023 unwound when the Mets had all those leads with Scherzer on the mound and Verlander on the mound, and the Mets just couldn't get anything done. The Braves swept them. Anytime there was a big spot, the Braves were able to get a big hit and win. It is a great offense. It continues to get better every year. And, you know, you figured that was how the script was going to play out. And this was an important road trip early because how horrible the homestand was. And you know me, I'm patient. I'm balanced. But I had the juices flowing. I just talked about, you know, even as a pundit, I have to be balanced. I can't be a fanboy coming on here. But I want the Mets to win. And I have to take that hat off. I want to enjoy the sport. And when I get my juices flowing this early, you know that the season has started. But more importantly, and we broached it a little bit on Sunday, but it was more about other things after the homestand. The Mets could have easily been buried. And not that this season would have been over, but they could have been putting themselves in a really bad spot with a bad road trip. They needed to have a winning road trip, or at least a 500 road trip, to normalize the season. And both Cincinnati and Atlanta are not easy places to play. They're hitters' ballparks. The Mets pitching, because of doubleheaders and short stints by the starters, was in tatters. And the recipe's there to have a really ugly road trip, and they come out and they have a really good road trip, and it could have even been better. Let's face it. Saturday afternoon, they probably should have won that ball game if the bullpen was lined up a little bit better. And they were one big hit away on Tuesday night from maybe sweeping the Braves. Now, you know the old saying, if the king had blank, he'd be queen, or vice versa. But you have to take away a lot of positives here. And this is your first, as you go through the getting to know you phase, this is your first, I don't want to say a big test, but a measuring stick. Test series might be a little bit too early for what we call a test series, but it was a measuring stick. And when you look at the Braves and a really balanced, honest assessment from the Mets side of the ledger, the Braves are really good. They have an offense that back in the day before there was a universal DH, I would call it an American League offense. I'd call it a bully offense. You go up and down the lineup, and you really don't have a weak spot. If you want to talk about a weak spot, what's that? Kelnick, who I'm not going to get into a Kelnick conversation here, who's having a great start to the year. And I think he's going to wind up being an okay player, not a Hall of Famer like every Mets fan thought he was when he was traded in the winter of 2018. And maybe you could say Darnold, and we've seen our old friend Darnold do some nice things offensively, and he's a nice offensive player, but maybe he would be the weak spot. Now, Sean Murphy's not in the lineup because he's got oblique, so they were a little short themselves as well. But regardless of whether it's Murphy versus Darnold or Kelnick versus whoever, that's up and down. You really don't have a soft spot because even the veterans like an Arcia, a Darnold, a Michael Harris, a young good player but not the best hitter in the lineup, Kelnick, they're not the elite like the Acunas, the Rileys, the Olsons. But there's no, you get no blow. You walk through that lineup as a pitcher, there is no easy outs. It reminds me of those turn of the century Yankees lineups. And in a lot of ways, the Braves are kind of like those early 2000 Yankees teams. They really do remind me that similar type of situation, have a couple of really good pitchers in the rotation. You might have some questions out of the bullpen. Now, they don't have Rivera. Those Yankee teams had Rivera. So even when the Yankees were trotting out the Gordons and the Farnsworths, and maybe their bridges to Rivera were not elite like the late 90s Yankees with the Stantons and the Jeff Nelsons and stuff like that. They had Rivera. So Rivera cleans up pretty much every mess. Now, the Braves don't have Rivera. They have Raisel Iglesias. But when you start to look and you look at the Braves, and I don't think it's going to be like this whole year, their pitching hasn't been good. And they are slugging their way to victories. And they can do that and win a lot of games in the regular season. Because like I told you when I talked about the Mets, the difference with the Mets, and I go back, and it's funny, the day that Mendoza brought back a little bit of that 2022 top of the lineup, you're still talking about some of the same things that we were talking about during that 101-win 2022 season. Braves are a bully offense, so when they play a bad team, the Braves are no doubt going to probably clobber those pitchers and put no doubt on those games. When the Mets play some of these teams that they should beat, they're going to be a little tighter to the vest, and they probably are going to have to use an Ottavino or a Rayleigh or even Diaz to get a save because their offense, at least right now, without J.D. Martinez, can't produce consistently at the same level as the Braves. Now, I'll say this. When you look at the Mets right now through their 12 games, the offense, even though it's been awful, and it was obviously much better this road trip, now it's starting to normalize, they're always going to get to the point where they're going to get. If there's extreme performances one way or the other, it gets leveled out. This is the way baseball is. Baseball truly is like statistics. Everything normalizes. You get blips and extremes, but you can't sit there and use that as the norm because it's not. But when you look at the Mets after 12 games, after playing Atlanta, the one thing that, and I've seen it floating around social media and X and all that other stuff, the one thing for sure that I know is they're going to be in games. I don't think this is a team that's going to be non-competitive, assuming they, and that's always the caveat with anything, assuming they stay reasonably healthy. They're never going to be 100% healthy. They stay reasonably healthy. And the offense is not even the first thing that concerns me, because as you see the development of Alvarez and Beatty on both sides of the ball. I mean, to me, the biggest surprise is Beatty on defense. Even in the eighth inning when Duvall, they had the replay, they overturned it, Duvall got the RBI. That was a nice play he made. Nearly beat Duvall at first. Beatty has been good on the plays he should make. He's been surprisingly good on big defensive plays. He's starting to show life with the stick. I asked for Alec Baum type offense. That's what you've been getting so far out of Beatty. Alvarez has shown, again, continuing to be good behind the plate. Alvarez is showing that he could be a little better than Beatty. He might be that elite, middle-of-the-order guy. I think Beatty's going to settle into maybe a 6 or 7 guy in a good lineup. So those guys are playing well. yeah, you have your Harrison Baders in the lineup and your DJ Stewart, so you don't know what you're going to get. And Lindor still stinks. An OPS plus of 8. Pete hasn't got on track. McNeil, you're still trying to figure out what the hell you got there with McNeil, which version of McNeil. But in the end, when it all blends together and everybody normalizes, and they will, you have enough offense there to score. You have, I think, enough bullpen if it isn't burnt to a crisp, and that's the big if, and that's where I'm going, that you can be competitive late in games. Now, here's where the big getting to know you and where maybe both the Braves and the Mets are kind of similar, and even the Mets and the Dodgers are kind of similar, and where this thing is going to go. Ultimately, the teams that make the postseason, let's just talk about making the postseason, because once you get there and you play in these short series, these tournament type games, you could mix and match things in a way that does not necessarily look like anything like the regular season. Pitching is going to be where the rubber meets the road for all these teams. And that includes Atlanta, whose pitching on both the bullpen side and the rotation has been bad. Now, I don't expect the Freed to have a 14 ERA all year. Strider may pitch later in the year, most likely not. Too soon to tell. Looks like they're going to, you know, the fact that he hasn't gotten Tommy John surgery, they're going to try to work through this a little bit. So, you know, you have situations here. You know, Lopez is a solid middle of the rotation guy. Who knows what they got in Sale? They might have stole themselves whatever juice is left in a 35-year-old Chris Sale's arm, an ace, at least for a short period of time, 1 or 2 years. And I still think that the bullpen with names like Minter and Jimenez and Bummer and obviously Iglesias is, you know, not the level of Diaz, but, you know, he's been a very good closer in the past. It's not chopped liver. Doesn't scare me like you can't come back, but it's not chopped liver. Ultimately, though, the Mets, the Braves, I don't care how many more runs the Braves score and how much they look like the 2004 Yankees lineup. It comes with pitching. And the concern I have right now is that the Mets have, on average, the first 2 weeks of the season almost, they're averaging over 4 innings per game out of the bullpen. An utterly unsustainable number, especially because you don't have optionable arms. You just lost Johan Ramirez, who I think is going to come back and haunt them, because if you look at what he could do, we use properly against righty batters and not pitched multiple innings and burnt to a crisp and left out there to dry like they had to do on Saturday in Cincinnati, he could be a valuable reliever. And I think that the fact that the Orioles wanted him tells you that they saw some of the same things that novices like me saw just by going to Fangraphs. Because you don't have those optionable relievers yet, maybe with Daniel Nunez and Tyler Jay and guys like that, maybe that'll be different now. They're trying to, maybe that's why they got rid of Ramirez and said, look, we just can't sustain this without optionable arms. Maybe they can mitigate some of that. But I even went back and I said to myself, you know, what season where the Mets were successful, did they use a bullpen in a high usage rate, and how do they navigate it? And you don't have to go back that far. You go back nearly 20 years, a season that's very near and dear to anybody who is around and old enough to remember his heart. And that's the 2006 Mets, a team that we all believe should have won a championship, a team that we all believe would have survived Game 7 against the Cardinals, might have very, very highly likely, you can never say 100%, would have beaten Detroit in the World Series. And that year, the Mets bullpen pitched 543 innings, nearly half the innings, or a little bit more than half the innings, that the starters did. And they pitched almost a third, or about a third, of the total innings of the season. And I remember back then, Rick Peterson even talking about it, that they had to get better, that the rotation had to get better. Now, if you remember, they had some older top of the rotation guys like Glavin and Martinez and El Duque, and then they struggled with the guys like Oliver Perez and John Main and whoever they subbed in as depth to go deep. So usually by the sixth inning, they would go into the bullpen. And in the postseason, sometimes by the fifth inning. Now, you don't care about it in October. You got to navigate a month. You got to navigate 7 games or 5 games, whatever series it is. So that's all hands on deck. But you can't do that mentality and mindset through 162 games and 180-somewhat days. You can't do that. This Mets team, at the current pace, and I'll just check my math again, if they're going to pitch four innings every night in 162 games, they're going to pace to pitch 648 innings, nearly 100 more innings, over 100 more innings than the 2006 Mets, who at that pitching coach at the time, Rick Peterson, sounded the alarm, hey, this is not sustainable. What will this bullpen look like? Forget October, if you make it, or September, for meaningful games to get into the postseason. What will it look like by Memorial Day? Now, I say this, and then I swing over to Baseball Reference, and I look at the bullpen of the Dodgers who've played 15 games, and their bullpen's 1-1 in innings with the starters. I look at Atlanta across the field, and Atlanta, and let's see, here we go. Atlanta's pitching. They've only pitched like five innings less out of the bullpen than the Mets, and they have 11 games. So they've pitched five innings less, but put another game on there, and it's very well. They'll put another three, four innings out of the bullpen in a game, and all of a sudden now they are right there with the Mets with similar type of concerns. Again, you look at Atlanta, you have Max Fried, who's been annihilated. He's not even getting out of the second inning in his starts. Chris Sale is a guy that you're probably only going to get five innings out of. Charlie Morton, a veteran, 40 years old. Can you expect deep into games anymore? So maybe they're going to face some of the same things. Now, in their world, if you're a bully offense and you blow guys out, you could bring in a shaky reliever and say, you know what, even if they give up a couple of runs, not a big deal. Pretty much what the Mets did yesterday with Tyler Jay. Tyler Jay doesn't see that game if it's a three-run game or a four-run game. And if he does, he's got a short leash. The Mets are going to their A-team. The Ottavinos, the Diazes, the Raleys, got Diekman, guys like that. So really when it's all said and done, and maybe this is going to be the sport in 2024, and it ties into the conversation that's been going on all week about pitchers and injuries and length and how pitchers are being developed and how teams are utilizing bullpens and whatnot, it's going to come down to how will the depth navigate the season. And I don't know every piece of depth coming out from AAA for the Braves, but I can tell you, I like the Mets' depth. I like what I see. I mean, you're getting beautiful reports on guys like Christian Scott and Dom Hamill. They are starters. Now, I don't know if the Mets, as we get later in the year, will say if they don't need a starter, will they deploy them in a way they were planning on deploying a DeGrom before injuries forced them into the rotation, bring them up and put them in the bullpen, and have, similar to what the Yankees did when they brought up Jabba Chamberlain and gave Joe Torre the Jabba rules, and say, hey, Mendoza, here's how you use a Christian Scott. You bring him in or you get him up, he's got to come in the ball game and he's got to pitch, you know, no more than X number of pitches in an inning, no more than X number of innings. And I laugh because here we are, these rules have been in place for a couple of decades, and pitchers are getting hurt more than ever, but that's not the conversation for today. So you look at that, the Mets have some exciting depth, they have some interesting bullpen arms that we saw in spring training, Lavender, etc., down at Syracuse. You know, who knows what's going to go on. The Mets, from what our friend Ernie Dove, who's come on this show, who follows this fanatically, the minor leagues, the Mets minor leagues, more so than I do, he says there's guys in AA that should be in AAA, but the Mets just don't have room. That's an exciting, good problem to have. So depth is on the Mets' side. I think you saw the offense without a J.D. Martinez, who will help when he's ready. You definitely want to take some time here. You saw already how a ramp up and a rush job, like everybody rush, got to get him in for Atlanta. Here the guy who has, and you've heard me talk about it, one of the concerns I had with him was the back. One of the reasons why going back to shows in 2022 when they were talking about trading for him. Now, if you told me back then the Mets will let him give up Dom Smith for him, I'll take the risk on the back. But the back is a problem. When a back goes, it's done. There's no coming back from that. In baseball. So to me, Mets are 5-7. The concern I have early as we get to know this team is the length of the starting rotation. Even though they've been good, look, the Mets rotation has been better than expected. They've been better than the Braves, way better than the Braves. Yeah, Hauser got clobbered the other day, but you knew, we talked about that. When you have those Jeff Suppan type starters, that's the label I gave them. Those guys are going to keep you in games like a Quintana did. You hope that the veteran in them on the road is able to navigate lineups like the Braves on the road. But then you have what you saw at Hauser. When they don't have it, they're going to get clobbered. Good lineups are going to clobber them. Bad lineups, even when they don't have their stuff, they can navigate. So there's going to be games, more than you probably like what you saw on Wednesday, where in the fifth inning you're going to have to leave the guy out to dry and probably fall behind 4 or 5 runs, and away you go. Now, here's the real key, and this is going to be interesting, and we're going to be keeping an eye on this guy because he's been in the organization. He was picked up late last year in a nondescript waiver claim when the Mets needed arms after their bullpen was torn to shreds for the very same reason we're talking about now, not enough length from the starters. I mean, we're seeing the same movie play out here in April 2024 that we saw in April 2023 because the only difference is those starters stunk. Scherzer stunk. Verlander stunk. Carrasco stunk. Even Senga wasn't good. So they weren't giving you length and they weren't effective. These guys are effective. They're just not giving you length. If you get into the sixth inning, now you got into the sixth inning with Quintana, but you know, but away you go. But here's the secret weapon, and it's similar, and it reminded me a lot. And I don't know, it's too soon to tell if he's turned the corner, but he's always had good advanced analytics on spin rate and things like that. But Reed Garrett has been huge. He was huge in the doubleheader. He was huge in the comeback on Monday. I mean, think about it. How many of you are ready to check out at 4-0? I stuck around with the game because I just felt, hey, need to see a couple of more innings out of this team. But that game doesn't become a comeback. Yes, Brandon Nimmo single-handedly brought them back. But that game doesn't get stabilized and even stays within striking distance if Reed Garrett doesn't come in and do his thing. And he's striking everybody out. And you look at a Reed Garrett, a guy, and let's just bring him up over here. As I try to, you know, go from one page to another, I like to do shows. I keep all these windows open in shows, and then sometimes I say I have my flow, I get ready, I prepare, and then all of a sudden I'm like, where is it? But yeah, here's a Reed Garrett. Here's a guy that spent majority of his career, as a 4A guy, a failed starter in Texas in the minor leagues. So he's coming out of the bullpen. He's part of the Nats in 2022. That staff got torched. But as you go forward, and the numbers haven't really been good. I mean, the numbers were good in the minors last year for the Orioles and the Mets. And who knows if this is just a hot start. The numbers haven't been good. He spent some time in Japan and whatnot. But here's a guy similar to what the Mets, and maybe this history repeats itself. The Mets picked up, and he was a veteran at the time, but he was a guy that nobody thought was going to be a contributor, a guy by the name of Darren Oliver, a lefty starter that was at the end of his career, had a tremendous impact on the 2006 Mets, where he was able to bridge those innings consistently and go long and go multiple innings and come back, maybe not the very next day, but multiple times in a week. His name is Darren Oliver, and Darren Oliver was huge. And if you remember, he was even huge in the postseason because when they got blown out in Game 3 of the NLCS, he went out there, I think it was Steve Traxel that got blown out, and gave them elite shutout length. I mean, there was talk that Darren Oliver was going to start Game 7 instead of Oliver Perez. I mean, I remember that debate. Here, Reed Garrett, can he be the Mets version of Darren Oliver? Can he come in and give them the length they need when the starters don't have it? Because right now, you don't know how long a Hauser will go or a Manaea will go or a Quintana will go. You just don't know. And then you have doubleheaders and guys like Buto getting called up. And I think now that you're past the 12th is today and you can finally start bringing guys up. I mean, baseball has all these rules. You send guys down and they have to stay down a little bit. But you got to start looking at them differently. The reason Julio Teheran made $54,000 for one start is because they couldn't bring up Jose Buto or anybody, and they don't want to bring up Hamill or Scott yet. Now, maybe they wouldn't have, they still would have given Teheran the start even if Buto could be brought up, but I have a hard time believing that. So you have to start looking at these restrictive rules on call-ups. You have to do a taxi. Look, you have to do a taxi squad. I said this on Sunday. It's going to cost you $45 million throughout the industry for a minimum for a couple of league minimum relievers or extra starters, whatever they use. You're going to have to expand the rosters to 28. You're going to have to allow them to be pitchers. You're going to have to insist they're pitchers and say, look, 28-man roster, you have to have 15 pitchers and 13 hitters. You know, maybe you could say it has to be minimum 14 pitchers. You have to. unless something changes, it ain't going to change. This is going to take a decade to change. So, you know, do the Mets have that secret weapon, a 31-year-old scrappy pickup under the Billy Epler regime that potentially could be their Darren Oliver? You know, it's interesting. It's a guy to look at. And he's been really good. I mean, he's striking guys out. He struck out 9 batters in 5 innings. You know, the walks, like every other member of the bullpen, is high, but they haven't been detrimental. And it's not like he's getting lucky and they're hitting rockets all over the place. I mean, he's missing bats. Now, I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to have an ERA under 1 for the year or be the, you know, but you never know. I mean, guys like Reed Garrett, late in their careers, is the kind of crap you see in the past. You've seen the Braves do. You've seen the Dodgers do. The Rays do. And right now, for all the criticism that David Stearns gets because he didn't play consistently in the deep end of whatever free agent that the media and the fans wanted him to do to make their winter a little bit warmer, has shown, you know, he's got some depth. It's not like they're going out and, you know, scratching their heads and trying to figure out. Now, Teheran was a little bit of that, but he wasn't chopped liver Teheran. That was a guy that just a year ago was pitching fairly well for the Brewers. And the only reason, he did that I think is that the rules kind of put him in that corner, painted him into that corner. I mean, they could go down and get a Jose Buto, who very well could have been in this rotation at another point in time where you didn't have. If Hauser's not in the rotation, they probably have. McGill does. If, you know, McGill get hurt in spring training, Buto may make it. You know, so all those kind of things. So, and you haven't even talked about David Peterson, who's out there, and Kodai Senga. So there's two key starters that are not available the earliest till June. Peterson probably a little later, maybe Senga even later. So there's a lot of positives. And when this marathon, and this is the lesson here, guys, everyone's going to make a big deal about the Braves series. I've already seen, hey, look at the show, the Mets showed guts and everything like that. It's a snapshot. It's a positive sign. Basically, they normalize themselves. But when you heard Jeff McNeil talk on the post game with Gelbs, and you've heard some people who have some access talk about this club, they believe they're pretty good, and they're not panicking. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters, because they inside, Stearns, Mendoza, the players, understand what they have there better than anybody else. So here's the positive. The Mets have, I believe, enough offense when there's no extremism to the results to be in most games. I think their bullpen is really good. They were able to navigate without their top relievers, the Braves. Barely. Lopez, and I always question on that Lopez and him, like, is he tipping his pitches? Makes me wonder what's going on. Braves are always on. You know, those late and close games, they're always on these guys. Like, what's going on? I mean, I have no proof of that. And I probably would have rethink Lopez as the closer. You might have want to flip-flop them where he needs a little bit more rope. And Drew Smith starting to show that maybe he could be that guy when Diaz is not out. You got to figure out who could be that closer. It's not Lopez. Lopez is a guy that I think has to be in the right spot, lower stress situation. He's got good stuff, but even as a closer in the spots that he's had in the past with the Orioles, I believe, it just is not good enough. And Drew Smith, to me, he drives me crazy. He walks too many guys. He's long ball prone, but he's got the stuff that I think what the lesson I learned there is you flip-flop them. I think Drew Smith should be the backup closer right now. That's my opinion, because that's the real question. When you don't have Diaz available, and because of the how little innings you're getting out of the starters, you're going to have to almost have your core relievers and then your B team when those guys aren't available. Because and that puts a lot of pressure on Mendoza. The games where you have your Ottavinos, your Raleys, your Diaz is well rested, you really, when you bring them in, you got to win those games. It puts pressure on Diaz. Luckily, he's elite and he can handle it, because this is what happened in 2022. But it puts a very thin margin of error. So feel good. The Braves are not infallible. They have their own problems, despite the fact that they probably don't think they have any problems. They have their own problems. The Mets are not a 120-loss team. And I think we could now take a step back and start to ease back into the season and not worry about the roof caving in. I did say, and I'll leave you with this as we've round up this midweek or late week Talking Mets podcast. I did say I thought this team needed a healthy dose of the road, and they got it, and they looked like a different team. Now, weather still stinks. As I talk to you here on a Friday morning, we're having thunderstorms and more rain, and it's just like, I'm so sick of the rain. I hate snow, but I'm so sick of the rain and wind. You have no idea. A little birdie told me, now we have the Doc celebration on Sunday. We'll talk about Doc this weekend, and we'll talk about the current team, but I think Sunday we need to put a healthy amount of time on Doc and looking back, because that's part of the long baseball season is engaging the past, present, and basically future of what Mets baseball is. But I was told by two reliable sources that the ticket sales are awful for Sunday. I think right now, and this is probably old data, it's probably been updated since I got it, they only had about 16,000 guaranteed for Sunday. I don't think the weather's great, but it's not horrible. And really, post-opening day, and I understood it the first week of the season, the weather was really miserable. And the time, like, you got to work. People got to work. And having a doubleheader that starts at 12 p.m. during the week, the old business person special, it doesn't lend itself to you being able to manage your life. You have to make a living. But I think attendance is going to be a problem. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think it's the media pounding of this club. And I think it has to do with the fans' attitude. We've talked about that. I think economically, to be fair, is the biggest factor. I think it's very expensive to go to a ball game. And it's hard to justify, you know, a concert, a once-in-a-lifetime event, even a sport like the NFL, where it's once, 16 games, NBA, 41 home games. You get to see an elite player like LeBron James. Maybe you could justify it. But for a game that weather impacts obviously a lot, and you got to carve out 3 hours and another hour or 2 hours to travel. Look, you go to a baseball game, you're carving out a 5 or 6 hour day. It's like a job to go to a baseball game. And, when you add in the cost, it's hard to ask people to go there. Now, I'm not going to be there on Sunday, so I'm not here to criticize anybody who's not. I'm going to be watching the ceremonies, listening to the reaction. For me, what I do for this show, so much easier to do it from home. Because I need the whole pie to do what I do. But I would like to go, and maybe I'll go. I definitely will go to a ball game this year. Will I go to the ones where there's Doc and Daryl in the ceremony? I went to the Kuzman thing a couple of years back, and I just felt like I would have gotten more out of it watching at home, listening to the commentary, and looking at some old clips on the SNY broadcast and what have you. So, but it will be interesting. It will be interesting to see how the Doc ceremony goes. I mean, this is arguably, next to Seaver, the best pitcher in Mets history. We could probably get into that at another time. And I hope, and I know there's going to be probably some debate about the fact the Mets are even honoring two guys that really trashed the organization and put the organization in a terrible, terrible spot, whether they should be honored. But I think part of being a society that progresses is that you forgive and move on, especially when people have worked on improving themselves. So that's another conversation for Sunday. But I will be very curious of two things going into the weekend. Mets, good road trip, maybe feeling a little bit better about the club. Will the fan environment be better at Citi Field? How will the team perform at Citi Field? How will they react to Lindor, who is still struggling? Will they take the page out of the Philly fans' book and give him a Trey Turner ovation? We'll see on his first at-bat tonight. And, will the attendance get better for Doc's celebration? And then the question will be, if you can't draw for a retirement ceremony number, why? Is it Doc? Is it the time of the year? Are we at a point where fans, like I get criticized, only, why are you talking about these 80s and 90s Mets anymore? Are fans only interested in anything post-2006 to come to the ballpark for? Or the Mets a dying brand in New York? Not conversations for today on this show, but I'm very curious how the team is going to be treated this weekend and how they're going to play. Because if we see the opening week Mets go back after they played much better on the road, especially with the bats, that's something that we have to think about. Is that a trend? I mean, it's too early, but back-to-back bad homestands with similar type of apathetic play makes you wonder. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG, and on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I always want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy baseball this weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast on Sunday. Till then, take care, everybody.